Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all Marvel comic book vampire TV shows in the MCU, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And we are continuing our coverage through the darker part of the MCU with Blade. How was your 4th of July?
My 4th of July was pretty good. I went to a couple parties, did some promoting for my next big event, which is a toga party at the July 31st to August 2nd. So it was actually pretty good.
Cool.
How was yours?
Went to one thing I got invited to. It was all right. Stayed for a few hours, you know, barbecue stuff. Came back home.
Yeah. Yeah, the usual stuff.
Yeah, more outdoorsy than I wanted it to be, but that's fine.
Okay.
Blade, episode one?
Two.
Okay, the pilot is episode one, yeah. So this is episode two.
Yeah, this is episode two. We're doing two and three today.
Yep.
So, Blade, season one, episode two, Death Goes On, originally aired Wednesday, July 5th, 2006. Krista has a bad dream where she bites her mother's neck. Both Blade and Marcus start to hunt an ash dealer, Kane.
The ash dealer was kind of an interesting piece of it all.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting. Like, the ash dealer is played by Ryan Kennedy, and Ryan Kennedy has also been in, most recently, Roswell Delirium, but he was also in The Good Doctor for an episode, Tin Star for 13 episodes as Nick McGillan, NCIS, Mistresses, Twist of Fate. He's pretty good, but in this episode, in these episodes, both two and three, he is in there. He plays a drug dealer that basically used to be a blood pet the vampire house, and he is now hunting those vampires in order to sell their ashes as a drug on the streets, and so. It's a very interesting character, and, you know, we'll get into, you know, what Blade does about it later, but, I really liked his performance.
When we have this opening of, like, Krista coming home, butting the mom, did you think this was real, or did you believe it was a dream from the begin with?
I had suspicions that it wasn't real, because the mother just seemed too nice.
Uh-huh.
You know, whereas the next time that we see the mother, it's a more realistic depiction of her. You know, she's kind of worried, she's a little scared, you know, where have you been? You know, so seeing her right in the beginning, just being all smiles of like, and then it's like, oh, it's a dream. That makes sense.
Right, which is kind of weird foreshadowing for what's to come.
Yeah, and apparently new vampires can have these types of night terrors for 10 years.
Yes, as I mentioned to Chase.
By Marcus.
Marcus, yeah, like you had night terrors for 10 years.
Yeah, that's, I mean, considering that the life of a vampire could be hundreds of years long, those first 10 years have got to be very rough.
I guess it's small potatoes in the grand scheme of how long you would live.
Yeah, but that's really only important when you look back on it. When you look back on it, 10 years doesn't seem that much. But when you're in the thick of it, oh, gotta be rough. We also have our detective back in the show. You know, he did not get his comeuppance from the pilot. He gets out of that predicament at the beginning of this episode.
Yeah. I really hate this character so much. he is just dragged out for a while, and it's not fun. The Ash character, not like Ash Williams or Ash Ketchum, but the Ash snorting character drug dealer, I liked him. That was cool. But man, this cop bugs me. You know, cool way to escape, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, he basically pulled out one of his fangs and cut the plastic bag that he's being held in, that plastic body bag, cuts it with his fang, and then exits out of there, goes to the truck driver, kills him, and then, you know, presses a button, and instantly all the other vampires in the truck are Ash.
Yeah, you know, kind of like pretty funny. No comrade in arms, just like, you know, dead on arrival. This episode was directed by Michael Robinson, who has worked on Deadly Sins, Project MC2, Kyle XY, a show we could actually cover, Poltergeist the Legacy, The Outer Limits, Andromeda the Dead Zone, many other shows, and written by a guy who's got like a bevy of television credits as well. He has just definitely made all of his mortgage payments through TV. Deadly Force, Children of the Corn, Spy Game, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Adventures in Babysitting, by the way. He was the writer of that movie, the guy who wrote this episode. I thought that was pretty funny. The original Adventures in Babysitting, but also came back to be a story writer for the 2016 kind of remake on Disney, the Disney Channel, not Disney Plus yet, the Disney Channel. I never saw this version, but I digress. Powers, so he stayed in comic books for a while. Powers is based on a Brian Michael Bendis show. And by the way, Powers is one of the first PlayStation Network TV shows that got canceled because they just couldn't figure out how to do that, whereas today, streaming is everything. Grimm, Human Target, which is also based on a DC comic book character. The Dresden Files, which is based on a series of books. Angel, the Buffy show. Dark Angel, which is the John Carpenter show starring Jessica Alba. So he's definitely got his credits in those science fiction, fantasy, and horror.
Yeah, he's got a lot of cred.
Yeah, so he knows what he's doing when he writes this kind of stuff. He has a website. Unfortunately, it goes to a dead link because I was hoping to maybe have him on the show. And not so much.
Well, speaking of that, we've been trying to get Sticky Fingers on the show, and not going well.
No, that is not going to happen unless we meet him at a con.
He's just way too expensive for us.
Yeah, somebody from his party.
We don't
said,
have a lot of budget on this show. You know,
even if we did, I wouldn't want to spend that on an interview.
It is very exorbitant. We won't say how much. You know, email us at radiohorror@gmail.com, but if you really want to find out, but it's a lot for an interview.
Yeah, more than what we were willing to do in a cameo, at least. So
yeah,
camo or whatever it's called. Was that what it's called? Cameo.
Cameo.
Cameo. But going on with this episode, one of the things I really liked about it was they really do spend the money on the fight choreography in this.
Yes.
Also,
and the lighting,
the tits.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. Wow. This show was not for children.
No, it's not.
No.
No, it's not.
Spike TV, the man's network. What do men want? Men want tits and blood and badasses. Because let's face it, that's exactly what the Spike network was dubbed. It was the man's channel, right?
Yes.
There was the Man Show, which was on Comedy Central.
Yeah, the entire show fits very well on the Spike Network because, like, the lighting, the choreography, it's big budget. They've got sets that are very nice. It could actually be a show with such high production value that it would pass for a B-level movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. In this episode, we meet a new vampire, a new old vampire, Winston Haupt, who's played by Adrian Haug. And Adrian Haug, right now, you could possibly hear him as Nightcrawler on X-Men 97.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. He is also his voice on Assassin's Creed 3 as Haytham Kenway.
Oh.
But television show-wise, like, you could see him on, what's it here? Home Before Dark as Mayor Jack Fife, and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina as Farmer Putnam.
I know the second one. I don't know the first one you said.
I have not seen the first one either, Home Before Dark.
Mm. But Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, I watched, I think I finished that show. I hated it at the end, but
aww.
They wrote themselves into a corner, and they didn't know what to do and how to end the show. It's like one of those problems.
Yeah. This actor also played Nightcrawler in the original X-Men. So that's why you might
the animated series, the regular animated.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Interesting.
Kurt Wagner. So he basically plays X-Men in that original series, and now X-Men 97 continues the voice acting for it, which is just chef's kiss.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Yeah. So we meet this old vampire who's actually coming in from Prague to meet with Marcus to go over business and whatnot. And they go to a... How would you describe this? Would this be a vampire restaurant?
Sure.
Okay. So what they do is they wheel out in wheelchairs, drugged up people, and the vampire then chooses their meal for the night.
Yummy.
And so this character Mina, who doesn't actually have a last name in the show.
Which you think is, like Mina, like Dracula.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's the only reason they picked that name, because this is a vampire show.
Yeah, and maybe Madam Mina would have sounded good, you know, even though she's not really sex trafficking. She's just body trafficking, you know?
Same thing, that, non-consensual use of the human body that you're not consenting to. I didn't sign off on my blood being used for this.
It is trafficking. They are getting killed, you know. And Winston wants something more like corn-fed, so he gets this very, very cute blonde woman that seems to have come from, like, Bodunk, Indiana, you know?
I'm going to write a movie or a vampire TV show where the women get the upper hand and they, like, they wheel out the victims to be drained of their blood and they just reach up like a teat, you know what I mean? And just, like, reach the guy's dick and just squeeze the blood out that way, you know what I mean? Like, put a catheter in or whatever to pierce a vein and then just use it to, like, you know what I mean? Like, into a drink. I think that scene would become legendary and people would be like, women everywhere would be like, ah, thank you. I appreciate that scene.
Mina is played by Karen Connival, and she is known for playing Maurice in the new Planet of the Apes series.
Which one? Like the one that's currently happening? The one that came
War
out last year?
War of the Planet
year?
Of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Gotcha. Yeah, I gave up on those films. Simian monkey controlling the world future is just not my thing.
Yeah. Interesting, but the Planet of the Apes as a sci-fi genre was just not really my bag.
No, just never ever been into the whole monkey thing. Like Gorilla Grodd's a Flash villain, and I'm always like, I don't care. Titano is a Superman villain. I'm just like, whatever. King Kong is like the most I'll go to. You know what I mean? Because he's awesome.
Well, she has also been on a lot of different television shows. The ones that I know I recognize is The Good Doctor. She plays Nurse Dina Pedringa. She was on Supergirl as Senator Granberry. And Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency as Freya Dengdamor. And if you haven't seen Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, it's definitely worth a watch.
I have not seen that one.
I've watched two seasons, and it is great. A little confusing, but great nonetheless.
One of the things I do absolutely love, also besides the fight choreography, is the stunt work in this is pretty good. I can see why the show was canceled because of the budget. Trying to keep this looking as good as the movies can be really difficult, and I didn't have a problem with a lot of the action in this episode.
Yeah, this was a great, great action settings. I really enjoy and appreciate the time and attention to those types of details, especially because Blade is such a dynamic character that the script isn't giving Sticky Fingers a lot to work with.
No.
So he's using a lot of his expressions, and Blade as a character in this is more shoot first and ask questions later, or, you know, Blade them first and ask questions later. So having a lot of the story around Blade told through his fight choreography is a very interesting take.
True.
So we see that, you know, Mina doles out the dinners and is basically the place that Kane is targeting for where he's picking up the vampires to kill for the ash drug.
Gotcha.
So, like, when Marcus finds out, you know, he is super pissed, and, you know, she gets in a lot of trouble for that. On the other side of this coin here, Fritz, the one that we saw in that pilot get the vaccine, he is still wanting to go after Blade. You know, Blade is the issue. He wants to go after Blade like a one-tracked mind. And Marcus keeps having to shut him down. Now, all this time, Krista is trying to get information about why Fritz is different than all the other vampires. And once she finds out, she actually wants the drug herself because she does not want to have the disabilities, if you will, of the vampire condition. Project Aurora is what it's called.
Yeah, they'll they obviously, Krista needs to maintain her cover. So she takes one for the team and makes a decision all her own to take this Fritz out with the super-duper cure.
Yeah, Krista actually, during this big fight where the vampires are invading Kane's drug manufactory and Blade is also invading the drug manufactory, they have basically, you know, hightailed it out of there before both parties arrived. But Krista, in the fight that goes on between Blade and these vampires and lots of, you know, vampires getting turned into dust and everything else, she saves Chase from being shot. And then Krista takes off the head of Fritz with a sign, like chops, beheads him. And apparently that vaccine does not help against physical damage.
Decapitation!
But in the process, she gets a wooden stake right through her belly. So it's not her heart, because if it was her heart, she'd probably die immediately. But it's her belly. She actually gets some sort of flashback to her time on duty when she was also hit in the gut with something. So she's staked. We'll get to her improvement in the next episode.
Yeah. We're going to play a quick little commercial break by a fellow podcaster that's giving me a hand. Also, you'll also see here a ad for Vlada, a Dracula Tales sequel coming up soon, Colleen the Vampire. I also want to shout out to the MCU. We lost one over the weekend on the 4th of July. It was announced that Julian McMahon has passed away. He was Dr. Doom in two of the Fantastic Four films, and he was Cole on Supernatural.
So sad.
Yeah, indeed. Those Fantastic Four movies are not great, and his performance as Dr. Doom is either hit or miss. But, you know, he's like the only one to play Dr. Doom for more than one bite at the apple. So,
yeah.
Raw RDJ is the next up and coming. We had a really crappy Dr. Doom and Fan Four stick. So, the one that looked like a homeless man in a melted trash bag wrapped around.
Yeah.
But his Doctor Doom was all right. He was a good actor. He could do the stare down in anything very well. You ever notice that of Julian?
Yeah.
He had that stare down look. He was a very handsome guy. I will admit, as a heterosexual man, I can admit that he was a very handsome dude. I think that's it that we lost. Also in comic news, Jim Shooter passed away. Jim Shooter was the editor in chief at Marvel Comics through most of the 80s. His big claim to fame and disaster was the New Universe, trying to usher in this new wave of like brand new comic books IP, and it didn't lead to anything really great, and eventually actually led to his ousting as editor-in-chief at Marvel Comics, and he would go on to start Valiant Comics, taking up a lot of like old superhero IP that was not being used and blowing it up big time in the 90s for the 90s boom of comic books. But one of the things Jim Shooter accomplished early on in his career was he is the youngest person to get a comic book story printed as a teenager. He was like 14 or 16 years old. He got a short story printed in the Legion of Superheroes, which led to a job working for DC Comics as a teenager.
Wow.
And then eventually became editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. The biggest claim to fame under him was Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, which is the big, big crossover, the first ever Marvel crossover event. Today, they happen every 5 minutes. But at the time, they had never done a big company-wide crossover. Now, you didn't have to buy every single book. happening. It was just like the characters were disappearing in their books left and right, and then the next month they would be back, but you had to go read the 12-issue maxi series Secret Wars to explain what happened. The biggest thing that came out of this was Spider-Man then appears in a black costume, which would eventually lead to be known as Venom. So, but Jim Shooter unfortunately had cancer. I met him a couple times. He was a really nice guy. Was he a workhorse? Did he run Marvel like a tyrant, I was told? You know, did people hate working for him? Did he make bad decisions as an editor-in-chief? Was he a hard boss to work for? Yeah, but nothing gross or misconduct-wise. He just basically ran the office like the way he wanted to run it and made sure deadlines happened. He made sure books came out on time. You know, and he fired people, he yelled at people, and maybe he was unprofessional about it sometimes, but he made damn sure Marvel was run the way it was supposed to be, to make sure the books were coming out when they were supposed to be. And a lot of people didn't like it. You know, he was definitely difficult to work with, was the biggest thing I've ever read about him. But at the same time, they're glad he was on top of them to make sure the work got done when it was supposed to be. It was an office, it was a business, and he treated it as such.
And on that note, we'll be back.
We'll be back. And we're back in the next exciting episode of Blade.
Blade, Season 1, Episode 3, Descent, originally aired Wednesday, July 12th, 2006. Marcus orders Krista to deliver a bag to Vanessa, and Blade hunts the doctor who makes vaccines to vampires for Marcus. So in this one, we've got, introduced in the last episode, but we're going to talk about him now. There is a new detective that is on the case tracking the vampire detective Boone.
Yeah, we got so many detectives on the show now. It's becoming
I know,
top
I know.
Procedure.
It's a lot of them. It's hard to keep straight.
Like, what the heck?
So the detective on the case is Larry Poindexter. And Larry Poindexter is a very handsome man. And as such, he was seen on Days of Our Lives as Father Lewis, NCIS, JAG. He was also on Days of Our Lives.
Again?
NYPD Blue. Yeah, definitely plays a lot of cops and a lot of very handsome men.
I thought he was going to be like this big character on the show for a while, and he's just in a few episodes. It's just they really setting up this whole, like, I'm going to investigate the supernatural. What? Vampires exist?
Yeah, in this episode, like, you know, he picks up from one of the crime scenes that was talked about in the second episode.
Yep.
And he has this fang in his possession inside a little jar. And
I love that.
At the end of the episode, towards the end, he basically holds it up to the light and it poofs.
I love it.
Burns right in front of his face.
I love that. Like, that's so cool.
It was an amazing touch. Amazing touch. I love that.
He's actually in 8 episodes of the show, so he's a little bit more than I thought he was. But, his career is, like, long and all in television, going back to 1982 and still a working actor today.
Absolutely. He did a little bit of production as well as casting director on some things in the 90s, too.
What does that really mean in the long, grand scheme of things when you're trying to mostly be an actor? You know what I mean? Like, and I know some of his acting creds are a little ridiculous, like American Ninja 1 and 2, Body Chemistry 4, Full Exposure, Sorceress, Point of Seduction 3. I mean, Ninja Cheerleaders. It's like, wow. It's just, you know, we ever have him on the show, we definitely got to ask him, like, why do you take roles like this versus, like, doing like big mainstream things like Days of Our Lives? You know, it's not an insult, you really have to question, like, why.
You know, the answer a lot of the times, from my experience in the entertainment world, answer a lot of the time is those are the gigs that came to me.
He does, by the way, have contact information on his website for managers, talent agents, and commercial agents. So it seems like it's somebody we could possibly reach out to, because he does have a stint on the show longer than I remember, based on IMDb.
Well, we'll try to get him.
Definitely. So 8 episodes on the show.
Yeah. And we have also another character from the previous episode that makes an appearance in this one. He plays the Reverend Carlisle, who is basically tending to the ash addicts. He wants this ash drug off the street it's causing people to basically bite their own hands off, chew up their faces, you know, just, you know, the thirst for blood comes with imbibing this ash drug, and he wants it gone. He tries to talk to Blade, their old friends. Blade delivers him some, you know, drug money as a help to, you know, further the cause of his homeless shelter and outreach program. He suggests that there is a different option versus, you know, killing everyone or allowing Kane, the drug dealer, to live so that he can continue to kill vampires and still flood the streets with ash. Blade doesn't even want to entertain the thought. Like, he doesn't even want to listen to a single suggestion that this reverend has. And I think that in of itself is just the bad writing for the actual lines that Blade has, because I don't think Blade as a character in the comic books would just dismiss anyone offering any sort of help.
It all depends on who's writing them. I mean, Brian Hill, who has been on my radio show, and he's on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast coming up, talking about Blade, has written Blade to be a little bit more sensible, and also Blade now has a daughter, who he just found out about, of course. He can be still, like, rash and impulsive when working with, like, comical characters like Spider-Man or Deadpool, you know, but at the same time, he's not completely irrational either, so, but he is a stake first, ask questions later, still kind of guy.
I definitely think that Blade would have at least looked at all the angles in order to come up with the solution that he wants to go with, not just kill everyone.
Right.
You know. But the actor, the Reverend, is played by William MacDonald, who was was on, let's see, Resident Alien.
Resident Alien, that's currently on.
It is, but he was in a previous season.
Oh.
In 2022. But he's also on Riverdale as Principal Featherhead.
Uh-huh.
The Travelers as Gary Holden. And he's on a few others, such as Supernatural, in various miscellaneous roles.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, trying to pick out a thing that you would really enjoy.
What are you trying to say?
Okay, well, you do have that Superman preference.
Oh, I mean, whatever. Sci-fi, supernatural, horror, you know, I haven't seen every single thing on planet Earth, but, you know, I'm not that picky.
You've seen a lot more than me.
I've seen a lot more than you, yes, yes. I seem to have less of a life than you do.
Yes. So he was.
Wow, you so easily admit that, too.
I have a very busy life, I'll have you know.
Yes,
so,
I know,
like,
I know.
I have put off recording this podcast for a number of weeks because my life is just so busy. William MacDonald has a busy life, too. But one of the roles.
By the way, did you know near you is a vampire museum?
Yes.
I just found that out.
I have talked to people that have visited it, and they were a little disappointed.
Oh, is it not worth a road trip from Massachusetts to Pennsylvania to visit you and then hop over there?
I don't think so.
Ah.
From what I have been told from my friends, it is basically a collection of vampire tchotchkes and vampire, you know, tidbits, facts on little plaques, but nothing is really real.
It's not like here in Salem where we have some really good museums of some stuff, including like historical witchcraft crap.
Yeah, it absolutely. It's not like that at all. It's all reproductions and, you know, tchotchkes, things that you would possibly find made in China. But yeah, my friends were very disappointed in going there. I only had one friend that was impressed, and he is easy to impress.
Well, then we'll have to hop over to the Frank Frazetta Museum instead.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what that is, right?
Sounds familiar.
Look, you trust me, you have seen Frank Frazetta's artwork before.
Okay,
trust
okay.
me, you have definitely seen his art.
All right. In this episode, we start out with Krista's surgery. You know, she has to get over having that stake through her.
Mm-hmm.
And Ow. Then we've, right interspersed in that surgery scene, we have Blade crashing through the room of a motel, interrupting a couple having loud sex, and the woman has the fakest tits I have ever seen on camera.
This is my comment from earlier about, like, the production value of this show. Well, I don't know. Were they really fake, do you think? Do you think this is, like, a porn star?
Yeah, they did not move when she was jumping on his crotch. So they were, you know, hard as rocks on her chest. So, yes.
Why do... You have to explain it to the audience and me, Mr. Zeneca. Why do women get tits that are so rock hard when breasts are squishy?
Because you can actually be in any position and they will look exactly the same. So, like, real breasts, they flop around. When you're lying on your back, they kind of flop into your armpits. That's natural. Over time, as you get older, the breasts naturally elongate because you have children and gravity and all that.
Yep.
And fake breasts don't adhere to those rules. So if you have fake breasts, you know, depending on the quality of them and the size that you're getting and the composition of your body, they might appear, as this woman is, very big and very, like, rock hard on her chest. They're not moving. She's bouncing up and down on this guy's crotch, and they are not jiggling. Not at all.
Do you see a lot of these cosplayers that are doing, like, super-duper cosplays of famous comic book characters, whether it be, like, Vampirella or Rogue or Storm? Do you think a lot of them augment it to make it look just like what's drawn on a piece of paper?
Well, I know when I actually cosplayed Jean Grey, I actually put in my Jean Grey Phoenix outfit a bra that was jam-packed with rice to give my large breasts even more ample boobage. So, yes, I think that they would augment, whether that's permanent or just for the costume. You want to get the costume proportions right.
Oh, you're talking about, though, something that's just padding up to push them up a bit. You didn't get breast implants.
No, I didn't get breast implants.
Okay, yeah, so that's different, though. That's fine, you know what I mean? I've seen, like, look at Gal Gadot. She's not super-duper top-heavy. And she played Wonder Woman with, like, you know, a pretty decent costume to give her, you know, muscular curves and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that women get breast augmentations to help them feel better about themselves.
Of course.
Some people don't like the way the breasts look or move, or, you know, different cancers or just having babies, you know, that change the shape and you don't like it. So you have surgery because you don't like that portion of your body.
Correct. Or if you had breast cancer and that's the option to, if you had to lose your breasts, do you get the option of getting breast implants to...
To be restorative.
To be restorative and to make you feel better and look better and things like that. Which I you know, that, in that case, I mean, whatever. Your body, your choice and all that stuff, you know, I'm all behind it. But you're right. In this regards, it can be a bit ridiculous, like in this scene.
Yeah. Yeah. In this episode, we go and continue forward with the storyline here, where Kane is basically... spills the beans to Blade about his history with the vampire houses, and Blade lets him go because, you know, he's killing vampires. So he thinks he's doing pretty much God's work, you know, helping him out on the street.
Yeah.
Even though he's selling the drug. The new detective sees a video of the old detective biting and killing a trooper. And now he's very confused about what's going on in the world. And that's pretty much his stance for the rest of the episode. You know, we're getting that slow roll into the position of this detective and his position on this entire case. And I haven't watched ahead, so I am hoping that it pays off very well. Krista finally does visit her mom. And lets her know that she's not going to be around for a while. Blade meets her there at her mother's house. And she gives that big speech, you know, where, you know, this is the last thing I'm doing, then I'm out. As if she wasn't the one that was chomping at the bit to be involved in this in any way for her brother.
Correct.
You know, she's like, oh, I'm done after this. Like, no, you're not. And Blade even calls that out. You're not.
You're in to win it.
she got turned into a vampire, so whether or not she likes it, she's in this. Krissa finds the lab and finds the green bottles that are the vaccine, but she can't get in yet because it has super high security and needs a handprint. So I'm, you know, thinking ahead that there's going to be a chopped off hand at some point to open up this case. Blade finds one of the failed experiments. So in their quest to make this vaccine, a lot of vampires had to be killed, you know, trying out the vaccine. And one of these test subjects survived. He is kind of fucked up. He doesn't have his healing factor anymore. But he is around, and they find him at a casino. He leads him to where the lab was in order to try to find out who is the doctor that's running this, you know, where. And the failed experiment guy doesn't actually know any of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but at the lab, they find some evidence of some tools, some medical tools that they trace back to actually this doctor. And we find out at the very end of the episode that the doctor is an active OBGYN doctor.
Mm.
So he must be human to be taking all these patients during the day. And that was like a big da-da-da. In the IMDb synopsis that I read, it talks about Vanessa and this bag, you know, that Krista has to take. So Krista gets this bag from Marcus. She's not supposed to look into it, and she doesn't. She goes to this lady, Vanessa, who is also another one of those pets of the vampire houses, and says, Vanessa says, tell the doctor thank you. And she's like, well, who is the doctor? There's a lot of doctors. And Vanessa just kind of looks at her weird and then, you know, goes away. The actress that plays Vanessa is Sonia Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonia Bennett is in Letterkenny as a writer. You know, she's primarily a writer, actress and producer. But she has written episodes of Family Law, Kim's Convenience, Pregoland. Very interesting. And she was an actress in, most recently, the television show Allegiance as Caroline McDermott. She was also seen in Ghost Wars as Carla Kowalski-Jones and Mistresses as Vivian. A few others, but it seems that she actually does a lot more writing these days.
Mm-hmm.
Vanessa just has this very bit part where she just accepts the bag and goes on. And it's one of those kind of open question marks because Chase kind of teased Krista that, you know, you looked in the bag, didn't you? And Krista's like, no, of course not. And then takes Krista on a, how would you describe this? A food hunt?
Yeah.
You know, they're looking for people that won't be missed out of society.
I love this whole scene between the two of them because it's kind of hot. I like it when the woman is on the prowl. Too often, in most media, unless they're prostitutes, which doesn't count, the men are on the prowl. You know what I mean? It's the man seducing, or the women are mindless vampires. They don't have any character. Chase mm-hmm. has a mind. I'm not. Krista's a good girl pretending to be bad. Chase has a mind. You know what I mean? She's not Drusilla, so she's not insane. And I do love like how they are like just like let's have some fun with these pretty boys, you know. And this entire scene is fantastic. I do love the two guys who come over to the alley and what's going on? Oh, all right, nothing's going on. We'll just leave. I just like what? That was the best take you had out of those two actors. They just were just like, oh, okay, looks like you're having some fun. Also, dirty alley, dirty abandoned warehouse. I guess if you're drunk enough, you will bang two girls you picked up at a bar anywhere, right?
Well, you have
just
to
gross.
You have to consider that they are hunting for people at self-help groups.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the
club.
Guys picking them up, but like getting picked up though. One of them goes into a dirty warehouse, just being like, "Wherever I can get my rocks off, sure enough, that's fine with me."
Yeah, but before you interrupted me, we don't know exactly what type of self-help group this is. So if it is a nymphomaniac group, then this all makes sense.
I thought they said it was Alcoholic Anonymous.
They did? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I thought this was like a drug or alcohol, which is, by the way, the same kind of AA these days. And they do have separate groups, but they do kind of loop in the drug and alcohol people together because they want camaraderie. But yeah, I thought this was drug and alcohol related.
I didn't catch that because her story that she, like, you know, Chase's story and to introduce herself to the group and whatnot has a lot of sex in it. So I thought it might have been a nymphomaniac group.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so when I say drunken, I just mean like they're drunk on like sex and like drunk on like, oh my God, like I'm so horny. I want to bang this girl no matter where it is.
Yeah. Nymphomaniac. Okay. Anyway. So they take these two guys into the back alley. Chase very willingly takes this other guy into this abandoned warehouse and eats him. The other guy, his buddy, is starting to put the moves on Krista, and she's like, no. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, oh. And the ruckus basically causes Chase's cover to be blown, and the buddy peeks in and finds that his friend is being eaten. And instead of, like, eating the buddy, too, she just snaps his neck, leaves him there.
Yeah, basically. Just like a quick... Now, come here, drink. It's like, why would... Also, in Interview with the Vampire, do you remember that scene where Claudia...
The
dead blood. You're not supposed to be drinking dead blood. But when vampires drink from each other, isn't that also dead blood? I don't understand how the rules work exactly. Also, if you're drinking pig's blood, is that dead blood? Also, isn't blood coming from a dead person, like a human alive, then put into an incubator or something?
So
blood is not alive. That's the thing.
Blood is alive for a time. And you can actually, there's this weird thing that happens that your blood and your cells from your body still interact with what your body does when it's separated from you for a certain period of time. So your cells are still going to be moving on that slide plate as you're looking at it under the microscope until they themselves die. So there is a time where you can pour it out of a body and it will still be living. It'll still have all that functionality as if the person is alive. So having the snap neck, all of his blood would still be alive. Now, if you take it out of the body and you put it in a jar like a, you know, wine glass or whatnot, it's going to slowly die. And I'm not exactly sure how long it is, but I know it's probably less than an hour. It's probably less than a half an hour, honestly. But I don't think in this show they have those dead blood issues. Because they serve blood in containers all the time on this show.
Right. You know, it's like little sippy straw things. If you saw a humanist vampire seeking consenting suicidal person, which is a hilarious and deeply moving vampire movie that came out from Canada last year, The main character is a vampire who only will drink out of like a sippy cup blood, like the little bags, you know what I mean? The bags we donate blood in. And it's becoming a little like her family is like, okay, you need to go out there and like kill somebody, okay? And she's like, but it's just so much work and humans are, I don't want to kill anybody until she like finds a kid who wants to commit suicide.
Uh-huh.
And they form a friendship. And it's kind of sad, especially when you start looking into what happens to the people you leave behind if you commit suicide. That question's brought up as well. And it becomes a different kind of movie. Like, the jokes are there, the ha-ha is there, the darkness and the gothic is there. But seriously, if you got mental health problems, this is a good movie to watch. Because it does tackle a question I never hear asked.
Wow.
And it was really good. And it all's well that ends well. Just, okay. You know, I mean, you got to think about the title of that movie. It's definitely, there's some comedy. This is a comedy, but it's a good look at mental health, in my opinion. And a lot of people I know who have seen it said, yeah, that they wrote that very well. So,
all right. One little tidbit that we find out in this episode is that the vampire bodies burn at 1500 degrees for 2 seconds.
Yes, that's an interesting factoid. They definitely pulled from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know where they found that or if they're making it up, but 1500 degrees for 2 seconds, and it does not, it's such a fast burn that it does not actually burn the truck that the bodies were in, and that tooth, you know, doesn't break the glass that was containing it.
Right.
It just goes poof, you know.
Definitely.
And then at the very end of the episode, Blade gives Krissa some more serum. You know, they powwow, they meet up, and tells Blade all these things, and then she gets some serum, and that's the end of the episode.
That's all the notes I have here for this episode as well. We are going to be covering Blade to the very end, and then switching over to some dark fantasy. Ooh, spooky. In time for the Halloween season. Thank you for joining us once. Thank you for joining me once again, Mr. Zeneca.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
You can find us on thatradiohorror@gmail.com, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you happen to listen to us, Spotify, Stitcher, not Google Play. That doesn't exist anymore. So a lot of episodes. No, I'm not going back to editing all those episodes. That would be crazy. there are some people who recently I've been chatting with that were just like, oh, I found the podcast from Friday the 13th, which is still like the biggest thing we ever did. And I'm just like, when are you going to do more of that? Well, when the show ends, we were done. I mean, it'd be nice to have somebody come on that we from a previous thing we did, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But we're not going back and redoing Friday the 13th. Or something
like
that.
Yeah, I've wanted to do deeper dives of all the cursed objects, you know.
You don't have time for that.
Standalone. Yeah, I just don't have time these days anymore.
No, so we'll stick to the
it's on my back burner.
Short shows for now. Blade 13 episodes. Dark Crystal is like 10, I think, right?
I don't remember.
Dark Crystal short. Stuff like that. You know, going too crazy and too long right now is just out of the question. So this is a much easier pace to do it at. So we might throw in a cartoon as well sometime, just something that's quick and easy. I digress. You can find us.
Give us your suggestions too. If you want to hear something, you know, pass us an email.
thatradiohorror@gmail.com. You can do that at. Also, if you have somebody just messaged me on Facebook about an MP3 for their band, not the show to do that. Radio of Horror is on Sunday nights. As long as it's clean for airplay, we'll play it. So just keep that in mind. You can send us an email, thatradiohorror@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments, or you worked on Blade. If you're hearing about this, because we're hashtagging Blade a lot, then please reach out to us. If you go over to the Vampire Movie Minute podcast, I just interviewed, it will be up sometime in the future. These episodes are being put up before I get to the Blade ones, the Blade film ones. I just interviewed Eric Edwards, not to be confused with the porn star, but Eric Edwards, the actor. He was Pearl, the big slug of a vampire who drinks the hearts of children. Love it. From the Blade movie. He's the one who's the archivist, the big blob, the guy.
Yep.
So I just interviewed him. Good chat. So check out that interview in a future episode of the Vampire Movie Minute podcast, as it runs concurrently with this one, covering all sorts of Blade content since Disney doesn't want to anymore. But you can catch the Blade actor, Mahershala Ali, in Jurassic World Rebirth.
Hmm.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.